This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith. This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
In 2019, Southern California Edison shut down transmission lines to millions of people during severe heat. Why would they do that? We can ask about that and other reasons why your home and community might lose air conditioning during a heat wave, risking health and even death. Our guide here is Dr. Ray Klump. Ray leads a double life. On the one hand, he is an associate professor of computer and mathematical sciences at Lewis University in Illinois. But Dr. Klump is also software engineer and senior consultant for PowerWorld. There, Ray helps develop software that monitors performance, safety, and security of large electric systems. Ray Klump, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Why would a big electric company like Southern Cal Edison turn off power to their customers during high demand for cooling?
Electricity is a limited commodity. Electricity is not unlimited. There are constraints on how much power can be generated and how much can be delivered. Sometimes those constraints are caused at the generation point, but a lot of times they're caused through the transmission system because there's a limited capacity to transmit power across hundreds of miles. In order to preserve more critical infrastructure, such as hospitals and other very necessary organizations, and keep them up and running, sometimes a utility will have to temporarily suspend service to other customers in order to just keep the lights on and keep those other institutions running. They tend to do this in a rolling sort of way so that they don't plunge somebody into darkness for long periods of time. But it's all about managing the supply because it is limited.
So in some cases, you're talking about a rolling, a kind of brownout rather than a blackout, which is uncontrolled, really. It's maybe a large area and it's dark.
That's right. We want to prevent, the utility wants to prevent that blackout scenario. If they don't act quickly enough to abide by the constraints of the current system, they can end up damaging equipment, which would lead to that uncontrolled scenario that you just described.
Well, dependable electricity is just foundational to everything we do these days. So let's take a dive into how this power gets to our homes and schools and offices. Ray, what happens to power lines during a big heat wave?
So power lines are made of metal, and we know that materials expand when they get hot, and that includes metal. And so a lot of times on a hot summer day, you'll see power lines sag rather significantly. I know that there's a 765 kilovolt line not too far from where I live that stretches across an interstate. And on a hot day, that line really sags. And that's just because of the properties of metal. When it's heated, it expands and it tends to sag. And sometimes it can sag into underbrush below. I believe that happened in California in the late 90s, where sagging transmission lines contacted brush below and ended up shorting out the circuit, and that caused the blackout. So it's a serious concern, and you can see it with your own eyes on a hot day.
Well, maybe we could back up and help me understand something basic, and I'll bet it puzzles a few other listeners too. We picture power stations sending us electricity like Amazon sends us packages. It's one way from them to us. But somehow I'm thinking alternating current, it demands the power station get something back? How does that work? What's behind the need to balance big electric systems?
Well, power will flow where it wants to. It follows the path of least resistance. And so even though a power station may be in your local utility and you think it's generating power for your consumption and your neighbor's consumption, that isn't in reality the case. I mean, if you could somehow track the way electrons were flowing, there aren't particular electrons that are labeled ComEd or certain others that are labeled PJM. They are flowing wherever they want to. But overall, this interconnected system, this grid that all these generating systems are contributing into, ends up delivering the power. So although your local utility isn't necessarily serving you directly, they are engaged in a cooperative effort with other utilities to get the power to you.
Can too much power in the system also cause a blackout?
Yes, it can, because you end up blowing equipment, damaging equipment downstream. You know, for example, if you overload a transmission line, fuses, very much like in your house, will blow and interrupt that circuit. And then power can't flow down that line, but it's still in the system. And so that power will find, that electricity will find another path to try to flow through. But in finding another path to flow through, it may overload that alternative path and end up opening it up. And then the outages start to cascade.
I'm thinking of things like Earth Day, where they ask everybody to turn off their lights for a while. If that actually happened, it seldom does, but if it did, would that possibly damage the system if the power companies don't see it coming?
Yes, it could. Because when there's not enough consumption, but still the generation is present, you end up having voltages that rise beyond their limits. So, for example, we might expect to get 120 volts out of the wall, but when there's not a lot of consumption, we might see 125 volts or 130 volts come out of that wall. And that can actually damage equipment in our homes. It can end up frying light bulbs prematurely, that sort of thing. But it also can have an impact on equipment that the utility operates as well. So lack of consumption that isn't expected can also cause damage.
I vaguely recall, and I don't have a source to cite here, but it was statements that up to half of electric power generated is lost in the transmission system. Is that true at all?
That is true, because there is resistance in the system, and the amount of loss, usually it ends up as heat, is proportional to the square of the current that is flowing through it. So the more current that is flowing through a transmission line, the higher the losses.
Are there greater losses then in power line transmissions during heat waves?
There are. And that's another constraint on our ability to transmit electricity through transmission lines, particularly long transmission lines, because the longer a transmission line is, the higher the resistance and therefore the higher the losses.
Well, a 2016 study led by Matt Bartos now at the University of Texas found that by mid-century, rising air temperatures could reduce summertime transmission somewhere between 2% and almost 6% on average relative to what we got around 2010. So the power demand will keep on going up, but we will get hotter. There seems to be a relationship there where we'll have to build more energy just because of climate change.
That is true unless we seek alternatives. For example, there is a push to engage more and more wind, in other words, more local sources of energy, so it doesn't have to be transmitted across long distances, and particularly solar, since it's generated practically at the point of consumption. There are also architectural solutions such as incorporating microgrids, which, again, are local distribution generation facilities, so that you are not just relying on getting the power hundreds of miles, but trying to produce it and transmit it closer to where it's actually going to be consumed.
The biggest heat blackout in the U.S. has to be that August 2003 grid failure that darkened a bunch of states in the Northeast, plus Ontario, Canada. Ray Klump, you helped design software to monitor big systems. Have we learned enough to avoid that kind of chain breakdown?
Well, I'd like to say yes, but I think the experience of Texas in February, which was caused by the exact opposite problem, not heat but cold, suggests that preparedness is still a challenge. Now, Texas had some extenuating circumstances. The infrastructure wasn't built for that level of cold. They are more isolated than the rest of the North American grid because they're sort of a kingdom unto themselves in terms of their electricity production. But it does suggest that, you know, you can never be too prepared. And although we do try to study all sorts of scenarios and contingencies, we have to be always on guard and very diligent in looking out for what could go wrong. We have to be creative in envisioning what the nightmare scenarios would be.
Well, right. Regarding that, Professor Brian Stone just told us about compound events, kind of a convergence of threats to the grid. And there are so many reasons why an electric grid may fail. But one we did not talk about was a terrorist attack timed during a heat wave intending to cause multiple heat deaths. And hacking has brought down power systems. Tell us what happened in the Ukraine in December 2015.
Yeah, so a couple of days before Christmas, hackers broke into the Ukrainian power grid and plunged a large portion of the Ukraine into darkness. And it was perhaps the first known incident of hackers compromising the grid. And when you think about it, the grid is it's a very out in the open kind of network, right? So it's easy to conceive of the possibility for people to bring down that system, either through physical means, right, which is probably the more obvious way because it's so out in the open, but also since the grid is increasingly relying on computers for more efficient operation, it's easy to envision that hackers could break into those computing systems to change settings, to make fuses that guard the transmission lines trip out at lower levels, change how much generation, how much power is coming out of a generation plant. So because there's so much computer control on the grid these days, hackers have more of a target to shoot for. And that is frightening, and it's a real concern.
What if Con Edison or any giant grid operator is hit with ransomware like Colonial Pipelines? Everybody has to worry about that now, too?
Oh, yeah. People are worrying about it, and people are working very, very hard to solidify these systems. Yeah, interestingly, there has always been a little bit of catch-up in the industry. It's not like, the electrical grid was named one of the top inventions of the 20th century, right? But in a lot of ways, it's very old, staid technology, a lot of electromechanical devices. This move to the smart grid is more recent. This move to integrate more computing power is more recent. And perhaps some of the earlier efforts were not met with the level of rigor that should have been put forth to make sure that they were secure against hackers. And that's true of all computing. 20 years ago, we didn't worry so much about hackers. Now, everybody's much more on guard, and that includes people who try to protect the electrical grid. That being said, there are so many computing devices that are trying to make that grid operate efficiently that it's a tough problem, because the more computing power you have, the more of a target that system is for people who might want to bring it down.
Well, yeah, and then we have state actors. This is a long-term shot, but various intelligence agencies and media reports suggest that Russia already has the capability to hack American infrastructure from dams to power stations in the grid, and maybe China does too. Do you think that's really possible? Should any of us be concerned about that?
Oh, it's definitely possible, and we do need to be concerned. State-sponsored hacking operations have practically unlimited funds and tremendous expertise, and they engage students of cybersecurity from a very early age, train them in tactical warfare of a sort with the express purpose of gaining leverage over an opponent. And there are some very big fish to catch when it comes to any country and their infrastructure. And surely other countries are eyeing ways to break into our critical infrastructure that includes the power grid. So intrusion detection and response and continuity planning, these and redundancy, these are extremely important considerations. If what happened to the Colonial Pipeline were to happen to the eastern interconnect of the power grid, the repercussions would make the Colonial Pipeline incident look like just a minor blip. And yes, we have to be very, very concerned.
And switching to another outlying possibility, in 2017, I interviewed Dr. Peter Pry about the ways an electromagnetic pulse, or an EMP, could knock out large parts of the U.S. electric system, possibly for months, if major transformers were to be wrecked. And that could be due to an atmospheric nuclear detonation or just a very large solar flare that we might not be expecting. Do you think an electronic magnetic pulse could black out large areas? And if so, how hardened are American electricity providers?
An EMP could cause significant damage over a widespread area. I think it's less of an immediate concern than the thought of, and a less likely concern than a hack would be, but I do know that utility planners and operators do incorporate EMP risk into their studies, particularly their seasonal studies where they try to evaluate the readiness of the grid. So the consideration of EMP and its repercussions, that has become a focus of these kinds of contingency studies. So although it is a concern, I don't see it as big a concern as perhaps state-sponsored hacking.
Fair enough. Now, the United States does not really have a national grid, just 8 large systems, some of them connected to Canadian provincial electric systems. Is that a good thing in terms of avoiding a countrywide blackout or a barrier to distributing power efficiently?
Well, I would argue that what happened in Texas in February wouldn't have happened, or at least wouldn't have been as severe, if Texas had been more strongly interconnected to the rest of the grid. You may or may not know that Texas is an island electrically, and it was planned that way on purpose back in the 1920s to try to avoid federal intervention into their power grid. And if they could rely on power support from their neighboring utilities to meet the shortfall, I think a large portion of the damage they incurred would have been avoided. So the more interconnected the grid can be, the better, because then you can count on your neighbors for support.
What do you think about President Biden's infrastructure proposal? If that was passed, would that make the American electric grid more hardy going into the future?
Absolutely. The electrical grid benefited from the American Recovery Act in 2009. A lot of work went into particularly hardening the cybersecurity of the grid. But it's an aging infrastructure still. And so in addition to incorporating new technologies and protections against hackers, we just simply have to upgrade the more traditional kind of more boring kinds of devices like the transformers and the switchgear and the substations. All that has to be upgraded. And so any additional government support that can go in that direction, I think, will yield benefits when it comes to the reliability of the grid.
Yeah, strangely, it's the transformers that worry me. After doing research into the Fukushima accident and other nuclear needs, we found out that a lot of transformers are custom designed. They're only made by a couple of plants in Asia. They take months to arrive. If a lot of transformers were damaged, that's serious stuff for all of us.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, we don't have, I mean, our supplies of backup transformers are not, it's not a deep bench. So, to have more equipment in reserve would help everyone sleep better at night.
In your experience with the company advising big corporations like Commonwealth Edison, the TVA, or Southern, do you sense these essential utilities appreciate the new problems developing as the planet keeps warming up? Are they planning for climate change?
In my dealings, we haven't talked explicitly about climate change. It's always on making sure that the system is reliable, both with short-term studies and longer-term studies. I have not myself been involved in projects that are directly addressing the possibility of the worldwide temperature increasing by 2 degrees. However, I think implicit in the long-term projections is the notion that the demand is increasing. Demand will always be increasing. How can we plan now for increased demand 5 to 10 years down the road? So I don't know that, you know, there's an explicit acknowledgement of the impacts of climate change, but I do know that the utilities take their responsibility to keep the lights on today and tomorrow very seriously.
What else are you working on these days, Ray Klump?
One of my research focus areas is on the cybersecurity of the grid. And so that includes autonomous agents on the grid that try to eke as much room for electrons to flow as possible. So in other words, not having to build major new infrastructure, but rather squeeze more out of the existing grid through advanced technologies and more efficient controls. And so with that, with computer control, automatic computer control, you need to consider ways for these devices to authenticate to each other so that if you do have a network of devices that are trying to cooperate in making the power flow more efficiently, that they're aren't rogue devices introduced into the system or devices that have been hacked that would counteract that behavior. And so that's one of my focus areas. Anything related to the cybersecurity of the grid and automatic control, those are my interests these days.
Well, we're glad you're there. We've been speaking with computer and electric system expert Dr. Ray Klump, and he's associated with Lewis University in Illinois and designs software for electric grid operators in a company called Power World. Find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. That's published every Wednesday. Ray, thank you for sharing your time and your expertise with us.
I really appreciate the time. Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.